Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Everyone, I'm really excited today. I don't know why I'm in a really weird mood. Well, actually, you know, I think it might be. I've been doing the Fitbit sleep score and I got an 84. So that might be why, because I've been getting really shitty sleep scores. And I can hear myself talking and the nasality of my nose today. It's bad. And that's why we have Erica Rhodes here today. To talk about. No, I'm kidding. I'm so excited. Erica Rhodes is here. Erica has, I'm sure if you're a comedy fan, you know Erica because she has specials on networks. The most recent one is on Amazon Prime. It's called La Vie en Rhodes. La Vie en Rhodes. And as you know, I'm French. So, but Erica, welcome to the podcast. You know, I am very thrilled to have you here. I don't have a lot of, and I consider you a younger person. I find some people do not have a story. I mean, they do have a story. Everyone has a story, but I'm just saying, I do a lot of research and your life is fascinating, fascinating. So I'm thrilled to have you here. I don't know if you've ever heard the podcast or know anything about it, but I do a lot of research.
Sounds like it.
Oh, yeah.
Your homework. Some people don't do their homework. They just get up.
And oh, please. You know what? You know why I do this? First of all, this is a labor of love because I make $0. No, this is a labor of love. And I have been doing this for so long, you know, in the business. The feeling when you're being interviewed and they haven't done their homework, it's humiliating, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, don't ask me how I started doing stand-up. Don't ask me that. Who I think is funny. It's just lazy. These are the other questions.
When they ask you, like, what can people expect from your show? I don't know. I'm going to take a shit on the fucking stage and they're going to clean it up. Like, it's so annoying. Don't you get that in your interview?
Yeah, those are the three questions you get the most. And how do you start? Who do you think's funny? And what are your jokes?
Right. What can you expect? Because what can people expect? Because I don't want to do my job. So... Right. It's really bad when you do radio, when you go to a radio station and they're like,
who you are. Yeah.
And they have a sheet and, it's like, you know, they didn't look at the fucking sheet or do any of their their preparation for whatever. Anyway, Erica Rhodes, is a fascinating human being. She is the sister of Hillary and the daughter of Dean and Christina.
Wow.
And her grandfather was a Jew. Good night, everybody. Take care. Dean Rosen. What was his name? Rosenbaum?
Rosenbaum. You know that is
I do my research. I do it research really, really a lot.
That's impressive. Yeah, my dad's dad. Rosenbloom.
Rosenbloom, yes.
So my last name would have been Rosenbloom.
But the grandfather said, listen, you know, they don't love the Jews. Let me change it to Rhodes. No one will know. And I'll marry a goy. And that's it. So
he was a pot and pan sales guy. He was trying to sell pots and pans. And he was like, you know, I'm not doing a very good job selling it. So then he changed his name to Rhodes.
And he still sucked.
Yeah, my dad was like, I think he was just a bad sales guy.
That's so funny. I read that in an article. We were like, I think he was just a bad salesman.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with his last name. I mean, there's a lot of really cool people that come out of Newton, Massachusetts. It's that town. I mean, I know people in my personal life from there, but it's like, it really, is it the school system? I mean... Look at the people.
A weird outlier. Yeah. You know, did you ever read that book Outliers by Gladwell? It's like one of those weird pockets where it's just a lot of funny people live there.
I know. It's incredible. You are the daughter. First of all, I have to say, I find your mother fascinating. Your mother, and your father. So your father was a clarinetist and he, God rest his soul. Had MS and he had to give up the clarinet, which was also my instrument in college.
Oh.
But I'm sure I wasn't nearly. But he had to give it up and became a CPA because of the MS. And your mother and her two sisters are all professional violinists. Like, that's fucking amazing.
I'm just fascinated by how much research you did. that's really fascinating.
Yeah. You know why? Because I believe everyone has a story and I want to hear it. Like, I want to interview some, I want to know all about them, you know, I don't know. It's just my curiosity, but, can I just read something while you're here?
Yeah.
This is like, I can't even, all right, ready?
Yeah.
Like all right, let me just say something. Your mother has a BA summa cum laude from Connecticut College. A master's in music from New England Conservatory and a JD cum laude from New England School of Law. What the fuck? What is your mother?
And she got into Harvard Law School and turned them down.
Why? I love her.
She wanted to do violin instead.
Okay. I just want to say, like, this is genes. And I'm a music person and I know you're a music person too, but it's the intersection of music and stand up is so incredible. And I was listening to when you were talking about your new special where they were in the cars and I try to explain this in a lot of interviews I have that it is a rhythm. Every audience has a different rhythm and they sort of decide when you're going to start your next joke, if you're going to do a tagline, you know, and in that situation, it's so, I did a drive-in too. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. And I hadn't done any like leading up to it. I know a lot of people did them after that, but we were sort of the first people to do them. And then I didn't get any practice or anything.
It was great. So don't fucking worry about it. Okay. So your mom grew up in Minnesota.
Yes. So their grandfather used to play piano for silent films, you know, when they used to have
a
pianist. And so I think he taught them violin, all of them,
all kids. Three of them. And they
she has this brother too. So he also plays violin.
I love that family. I love that. So you grew up in sort of utopia-ish, don't you think?
Newton?
Yeah.
In some ways. I mean, I would say it's a pretty competitive place to grow up as a kid, you know? So if you're not really striving for excellence in academia, then you're kind of in trouble.
Your mother was still is a grammar mental patient, as am I. I can't.
I was going to say, is that how you pronounce academia?
Yeah.
It sounded weird.
No, was right. You were right. But I mean, I hate it too. And you said you've gotten to that point now where you can't.
My ear is like, ow, ouch, you know?
It's so weird. And I'm like, really? You know, I did good. I feel good. I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I can't. I don't know what.
Do you want to do my sister and I's podcast?
Oh God, I can't.
Why are we making I a possessive? eyes? My is a word for a reason.
Right. It's so annoying. So you have the sister. And I know that you're a trained ballerina and you play cello.
Yeah. I don't do ballet anymore, but when I was a kid, I did. Yeah.
So how old were you when your father had to give up his dream of the clarinet? Or were you not born yet?
I think I was barely born. I think it might have been right before I was born that he figured it out that he had MS.
So do you ever remember him well? Or were there years where he was okay?
Yeah, I mean, when I was very young, I remember him walking. And then he was on crutches when I was maybe like 9 or 10. And I remember because he used to like jokingly like balance on my head.
Right.
That was the exact right, you know, height for him to balance on it. So he would use my head as a balancing, you know.
And he was funny.
He was very funny. Yeah. So very funny.
So you basically get your smarts and timing from your mother and your humor from your father.
Yeah, and my mom's like a funny character, but she's not funny on purpose. She's just sort of funny by accident.
Right. So I'm curious to know. I mean, it's so hard to see your father, your parent, not, you know, as able-bodied as your friend. I mean, how do you think that affected you, the having a disabled.
I think it made me very sensitive because I used to be very worried about him from a very young age. So I remember when I was in kindergarten, we had to keep a journal and I used to start every journal with, I wish my dad didn't have MS.
Aww.
And it was every day. And then later I was like, no wonder I was the teacher's pet. She felt so bad for
me. Do you think your sister had the same sort of...
I think my sister had a bit more of a, I think she had a different coping mechanism where I think she was able to shut things out more.
Right.
So, you know, I would go in with my parents and my sister would kind of shut down and go into her room and do her own thing. So I think a lot of her coping mechanisms went internal and mine went external.
So you can stand on your head longer than any other person.
Now you're just showing off, okay?
No, what?
You just have these details.
So you have a flat head. You have a flat head, right?
You're the only one who's done that kind of research. That is in one article ever.
I know.
Yeah, that is impressive.
Thank you.
I took gymnastics when I was little, and I was not good at that. That was not.
Can I just say something? When I was growing up, I mean, I'm gigantic, but... All that, I don't know if they did it in the Newton public schools, but because you're younger than I am, but it was like that presidential fitness test and you had to do all this shit that I couldn't fucking do. And I fucking hated gymnastics. I'm too big and I'm uncoordinated. I hated
it. You had to do that? Like that
was like they had the presidential fitness test. They also measured and weighed you in front of the entire school in the fucking gym, which was also very, it was bad. So you took gymnastics and
and I was scared of everything. I was scared to like, you know, I wasn't good at cartwheels and flips and things like that. But then we had this competition where we had to stand on our head. And that day I was like a star because I just stood on my head so long and I won a pack of gum. And
then great.
I think I can retire now from gymnastics.
You want a pack of gum?
Yeah, I want that's a hilarious. Pack of gum.
Oh, that is crazy. So as a kid, before you get this gig with Garrison Keillor, is everything just normal? Do you feel like you have like an exceptional family because your mother is like, what the fuck? And your father, like, reading about your parents is like, that's like where I grew up, it'd be like, wow, they're so like, he's a clarinetist and she, you know, like she's a violinist and lawyer and, you know, were you exceptional?
I think I did feel a little pressure to do something really well.
Right.
And, I was sort of a natural performer because my mom noticed that I would just perform wherever I was. Like I was very outgoing with strangers.
Right.
But then I was very shy at the same time. So right. I had this weird sort of, you know, conflicting personality. But she got me an agent when I was like 5.
That is so weird.
Yeah. I know.
And she was like, this kid is, you know, this kid's got something.
Her friends kept telling her like, man, you got to get her into acting. She looks right. like, you know, Drew Barrymore. Cause it was around that time, you know,
right. E.T.
And I was around that age. And so, I think a lot of people told her that before she decided to do that, but.
Right. And so were you the only kid in your school with an agent?
Probably. I don't really remember doing that many auditions, but I do remember modeling a waterbed. And I thought, man, if this is show business, count me in.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious.
It was amazing. You know, I just pretended to sleep for a couple hours as they took photos.
And they took photos and you got paid.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra, that has a little green tea in it. And so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out. And what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary, can't speak. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
You talk about your family. I read this thing that your family was so crazy that when someone would ring the doorbell, you would all, it, like a neighbor would come over, you'd yell, normal, normal, like yeah, okay, everyone, be normal now.
Yeah. Yeah, we were just eccentric. I don't remember exactly what we'd be doing, but we were all a little bit weird. So we just had this saying where we'd be like, normal, normal, like people are coming over.
You know? Right. And it's so weird that you knew you were weird. You know what I mean? Like, and we're okay with it. And we're like, okay, we know how to be normal too, but in this safe, we have like the safe space where we can just be, you know.
We didn't have like, yeah, because I wouldn't say we had a traditional family thing. Like we didn't have like family dinners. It was always right. Sort of each man for himself. It was
really,
like, yeah, it was like eat when you want, eat what you want. There weren't a lot of rules. We didn't have a bedtime. We didn't really have to do anything, you know? Yeah. So it was like,
that is mental. I would think, you know, I think of musicians especially as so disciplined and, you know, cause you have to practice and you know, and it's, but really you had no dinner. You didn't have like I grew up where it was every night, 6 PM. We all sat down for dinner and we're miserable for half an hour. And then we all went and did our own shit. But you like, there was no structure whatsoever.
Not a lot of structure because my mom would work at night. So she'd, you know,
right. She was in the symphony.
And then she would come home. And I remember it'd be this like excitement, like, oh, mom's back. And then it would be like 10 PM and we'd all be snacking and hanging out.
Oh, I love that. That's, yeah. I've said this before on the podcast that when my kids were little and my ex was like, you know, every time you come home and they wake up and blah, blah, blah. And Joan Rivers, God rest her soul, I love you, Joan, said, you know, it doesn't matter what time you spent time with them. It matters that you spent time with them.
That's so true. I remember waking up one day, like in the middle of the night, and there was a huge pink panther in my bed. And she had gone skee balling with all of her musician friends and won two of those gigantic pink panthers and put them in my sister and
our, oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Did you have a hard time getting up for school in the morning or anything? Or
probably. Yeah. I remember having weird things in the morning where I would wake up, shower, and then go back to sleep for an hour, which now is probably why I'm not a morning person.
So, all right. You're 10 years old. Yes. Your mom asks Garrison Keillor from Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah.
Prairie Home. She asks him to do a benefit for their orchestra because they come from the same hometown in Minnesota. Yeah. And he does this benefit. He says yes. Mm-hmm. And you're out to dinner or something. You're at a restaurant and he hears you speak, which is one of your, you know, very original, incredible characteristics that will get you work, even though it's your voice. and he says, will you do Prairie Home Companion? Is that how it happened? Plus your mother said, oh my God, my sister is perfect for you. And he ends up marrying your aunt. Is yeah. this correct? Okay.
Thanks. That's all true. Yeah. It happened over sort of a gradual time period, but the next day that after I met him, he asked me to do the show. So I was doing it at like age 10.
Age 10, you're doing this huge fucking show and you're playing his conscience, right?
Yeah.
And I love the way you talk about how, cause this is so true, how you didn't care cause you didn't know. You know?
Yes. I'm still trying to get back to that point of like just that effortless being funny without trying to be funny.
Right. You know? Erica, I'm going to tell you right now. Because I really have this down that I really want to talk about every decade of life because I have always done bits about what happens in your 20s, what happens in your 30s, what happens. Yeah. it's going to come back, but it's going to come back in about 20 years. And you're going to be like, whoa. I don't fucking give a shit, but it doesn't matter. You know,
I want it to come sooner than that though.
Maybe it will. I mean, you're not me. I mean, I hit 50 and I was just like, ugh, fuck you. You know, like you just don't care anymore. So you're
forward to that.
So you're 10. And do you have any idea that this is like this cult?
No, I had no clue what it was. I was into ballet. That's all I cared about was ballet, everything. And, you know, I wasn't scared of live audiences. So I don't remember feeling nervous or anything. I just remember they had to give me this box to stand on because the microphone was too high for me.
Right. I never had to do that. Even at my bat mitzvah. Let me tell you something. Every kid at their bar and bat mitzvah had to stand on a thing on the bima. And this is the Jew bell, by the way.
So what is that?
It's the Jew bell.
Oh, like you're being Jewish.
No, like anything. Oh. If we talk about anything remotely Jewish, they get a ring. Okay. So I'm standing on the bima like your father.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm standing on the bima and I'm taller than the rabbi. I was like, yeah. So you had to stand on the box and just do this thing. And then what happened afterwards? Were your parents there? Like, was it like... Were
no, my aunt was there because he was dating my aunt. So she was with me. And then I met Allison Janney too, because she
Meryl Streep. Wait, Allison Janney, Meryl Streep, and Martin Sheen.
The first show was Allison Janney. And you know, kids don't know. Well, she wasn't famous yet, but kids also don't know who anyone is. But I got a very good vibe from her as a kid. I thought she was really cool.
Oh, she is the coolest.
Yeah, I thought and she then, was best.
When you met Meryl Streep, did you know, oh my God, this is Meryl Streep?
Yeah, because I was in my 20s by then.
Okay. Can we, we're not even there yet on my list of things we're talking about. Okay. What the fuck? Like I met her once when I did Shakespeare in the Park and it's like, and she's tiny. She's fucking tiny.
Yeah.
And just exactly what you would think, right?
She was really nice. She was very nervous because she wasn't really used to live radio.
Right.
You know, and you don't get to do a second take or anything.
Right.
And Garrison edits on the fly. So he edits like an hour before the show and then he edits during the show.
Right.
So she was freaking out because he had made all these cuts and edits and she's like, I don't know what to do. He's editing everything.
Isn't it funny how, you know, because we're comics. We do that in our head the entire time we're on stage. You know, you're standing there, you're like, oh, they didn't get that. So they're not going to get this. Sometimes I'm like, you don't deserve this next joke. So I'm not even fucking telling, you know, like, I don't want to tell you this joke. I don't know what it is, but it's funny that these like mega stars, that is the scariest thing for them. Not having a script.
Yeah. She really wanted to, you know, be very prepared.
Right.
She was just a little nervous, but really sweet. She was.
Oh my God. And what about Martin Sheen?
Really nice. Yeah, I did it. I did it twice with Martin Sheen. So I, you know, talked to him a little more than Meryl Streep. But.
I can't believe your fucking life. All right. So anyway, you're doing whatchamacallit. Oh, and Garrison came to see you in the Nutcracker, I read.
Yeah, that was when he met me.
Right.
For the first time.
A ballerina. Now you also, I read, went to music camp in Maine. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. With a rabbi. Thank you. What was the name? I went to music camp too. What was the name of your music camp?
It was called New England Music Camp.
Oh, and did you enjoy it?
I loved it. And I wanted to go to water camp that year. I had decided I'm going to water camp. And my mom humored me and she said, okay, let's talk about water camp. And she even had the guy come over and talk about water camp. And then afterwards, my mom said, but honey, can you swim? And I was like, not really. But I, you know, I want to just go. I pictured it like water slides. I thought there was a bunch of water slides and you were just playing in water all day. So I didn't realize like water camp meant swimming.
Do you think she planned that whole fucking thing out?
Probably. Yeah.
I love her. Yeah. Okay.
And then, what about music camp? So I went to music camp.
And you did cello. And did you like music camp?
I loved
it. Yeah, we already discussed that. You loved it.
I fell in love the first time in music camp.
Really?
Yeah, with a French flautist.
No.
And his name was Alexis Llewellyn. And he was bipolar and he was very emo, you know, like,
oh my God, that's so perfect.
Angsty. He like swore like nonstop. And he was like, you know, I was madly in love with him.
Was he French? Was he from France?
Yeah, he was from France.
And did you guys make out or anything?
We kissed, but I was like too scared to do anything else. Like we kissed and then I went back to the cabin and they were like, was it a French kiss? You know, we were 15 and I was like, well, he's French.
Yeah, you fucking asshole. Wait, so was he a good flutist?
Yeah, he was
flautist.
Good. Yeah, he was a good flautist and he was.
My music teacher said you don't play the flout, so you play the flute. That's what my music teacher said, but some people say.
I've heard my mom say both, so yeah. Maybe both is acceptable.
Okay, so he was really good.
Yeah, I mean,
have you looked him up since? Have you looked him up?
I haven't, but afterwards I wrote him letters for like a year and I never heard back from him.
Fuck him.
I know.
Fuck that fucking French fuck.
And then I heard that he threw the flute out the window.
No way.
A moment of rage. Yeah.
Oh, I hate him. He can go fuck himself.
But I was in love, man.
So that was your first big
love affair?
Yeah, love affair. Which you talk about how you're not good with, you tend to get very attached, very, okay.
Well, just to the wrong people.
Yeah. Okay. So this gig with Garrison, how often is it? Does it
leave other
shit?
It wasn't like every week. I wasn't a regular on it. So it was sort of whenever he decided.
Right.
So I think when I was 10, I did it a bunch of times and then, you know, a couple of years might've gone by. Then I did it a few more times. And so it was sort of random.
Did you fly to Minnesota to do it?
It was all over the country. So I think I did it in, you know, at Tanglewood and
Massachusetts
a couple times. And then, I did Minnesota. We once did a tour. So we did like, you know, Southern tour.
That's so fun. Did your parent, who came with you? Your aunt?
My aunt, yeah.
Wow, that's fun. And then was your sister jealous?
I don't really think so. She was sort of on her own path, you know, most of the time.
Mm-hmm. All right, very healthy emotionally. Okay, so were you like number one in your class in high school?
No. No, I was a bit of a rebel.
Really?
Yeah. Not in a typical way, in a way that I just wanted to focus on what I liked and I didn't see the point of anything else.
I feel the same way. I still feel the same way. Now that I'm older, I'm like, ugh, I don't want to do anything I don't want to do. You know what I mean?
Same.
It's just like, no, I'm not here for that long and I don't fucking want to waste my time.
Exactly.
And I have ADHD, right?
I think I do too, actually. That's why the way your brain is working, I'm like, oh, this is like,
yes, this is
how my brain works. Otherwise, I get really bored.
I get pissed off.
Yeah.
Like if I have planned everything out, right? Like, okay, I'm going on a hike or I'm just making this up. Okay. And I get, I need my headphones. I need my water, blah, blah, blah. And I get all my shit together. And then I'm like, okay, I'm really focusing. I got everything together. And then I get in the car and I'm like, where the fuck is my phone? Like I can't.
I am
like,
the same way. But
But I get so mad. Like, oh my God, you worked so hard to get this all together. And now you fucked up. Like, this is what goes on in my head. It's horrible.
I know. And I always think, man, why are these basic tasks so easy seem so easy for other people?
Right. Like,
just getting, I had the same thing yesterday because I was actually trying to go on a hike.
Right.
And I was like, I can't find socks. I can't find socks and a mask. Now you want me to find socks, a mask, and my headphones and my fanny pack.
Right.
I'm just going around in circles.
It's just awful. Apartment,
like trying to find everything.
What about when you think you're done? And then it's like, nope, sorry, you still got a blank. And you're like, no, I thought I was done.
I have the same. Yeah. Every day I have that.
Yeah. Okay. You might have ADHD. Welcome to the club.
I have been diagnosed with it.
Oh, there you go. It's so, I get mad. I really wish I didn't get mad, but it's like, as I get older, I'm just like, it's really, I just don't want this anymore. You know what I mean?
Something for it, or do you just,
I do. Yeah. Well, I do my like meditation and play the piano, whatever, and all my exercises. And then I have Ritalin, mm-hmm. you know, whatchamacallit, the release, what the fuck is it called? You know, when it comes out in bits and pieces, whatever.
Yeah.
Extended release. So I'll take that, especially like when I'm writing or, you know, when I have tasks.
Yeah.
But I don't want to take it. You know what I mean?
No, that's my problem. I don't like taking things.
Right. But, you know, then I sometimes just like, you know, I give up.
Hey, everyone. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces, but I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew, the space looks so much better, and I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best, and Elisa has some too, and she loves them, and she talks to them too, but she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
So you went to the Boston University of Fine Arts
for a year.
And then you went, and that you, so you dropped out. Were your parents like, fuck shit, ass, cock, vagina?
Probably. Yeah. They didn't say it in those words, but
right.
They were probably thinking it. They sat me down, and my dad was actually really cool about it. And he's like, we thought about it, and we realized that, you know, sometimes the bird needs to fly from the nest. And
oh my God, I love Dean.
Yeah, he was cool.
And yeah.
but the thing is, I met a guy and I fell in love with him, and he was in New York. And so
do you think that was really what it was?
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it was a combination because I was failing music theory.
I love music theory. Yeah.
You do?
Yes. I don't know why. I love music theory and music history.
I could not do it.
Yeah. It's hard.
I learned everything by ear. So music theory was like, I can't wrap my mind around it. It's like math, you know?
Right.
So I was failing that, and I had a scholarship. So I was going to lose my scholarship because I was failing music theory.
So they sat you down. And so
they sat me down. They said they were okay with my decision.
But do you think your mother really was okay with it?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not.
But
they also knew at that point that they just couldn't tell me what to do because, you know, they had tried
for years.
I just did whatever I wanted.
Do you think your father was more forgiving or understanding because of his MS?
I don't know, because in some at moments in my life, he was a lot more strict about academic stuff.
Right.
My mom was more lenient.
Right.
They sort of ping pong back and forth.
Right. So you then go, you move to New York, and you go to the Atlantic Theater Conservatory.
Yes. After a year of, I had a year actually where I just played my cello all year.
Where'd you play?
Well, I took lessons from just a private teacher, and he was like an excellent teacher. And
right.
So I just would go to his house and learn, and then, you know, that was it.
Did you work?
I don't know what I did. I would have a job and then I'd get fired. You know, like I waitressed a couple times.
Oh my God. That's funny.
Fired every
and all time. You were, so you're like 19 years old at this point, or,
yeah.
And you're just going to cello. It's like you're a Torah scholar. It's like the people on Stissel that sit in the fucking, you know, studying the Torah all day long. So you're playing.
I was living in this brownstone apartment with two roommates who were in their 30s, and they were from Austria, and I thought they were so cool. And then I was around the corner from my boyfriend's apartment, and I would just go see him every night, but he was working during the day at a recording studio.
How old was your boyfriend?
He was 24.
Where did you meet him?
I met him ushering at Symphony Hall. Because it was like my first job,
right.
And I was a, you know, cello major, and he was a guitar major at Berkeley.
Right.
So we just hit it off, and I fell in love with him.
Okay. And are your parents visiting you? Like, you know, Erica, what is going on here? You're playing the cello. You can't keep a job. Who are these two women you're living with? And what's with this guy? He's too old for you. Was it any of that?
I don't remember any of that. I just remember, well, Erica's going to go to New York now.
And I don't know. I love that free spirit. Okay. How did you get into the Atlantic Theater Conservatory?
So I took some acting classes not privately at a smaller school. And then I auditioned for Atlantic Theater Conservatory, and I don't know how competitive it really was.
But right.
I got in to that.
What are your Dear Diary scripts that I love so much?
Oh, that was on Prairie Home Companion. And he started having me write stuff for myself.
Right.
He started with writing them for me. And then he started having me write just little bits about my life or my dating life.
Right. Like that. And that, you say that is what sort of trained you to be a comedian.
I think so. Cause it was autobiographical, you know,
right.
Personal. And it wasn't really trying to like be jokes exactly, but
right.
It was just me standing at a mic. You know,
I know, but I love that. So
yeah,
so you have the Dear Diary scripts where you feel, you know, free, you're playing the cello, and then you go to, and you're taking acting classes. You said that you, after the cello and the ballet, that you needed a performance outlet. And that's, when did you exactly start doing stand up? Were you
way later? So it took me a while to start
to figure it out that was what you were.
Yeah, the first time somebody actually said you should do stand-up was at my sister's wedding, because I gave a speech for her wedding that I right. thought was very sincere and genuine and real, and people were laughing hysterically.
And you were shocked?
I was totally shocked. I thought it was like the most sincere, you know.
Well, that's serious. Funny. Only yeah. The truth is funny. I mean,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. They were laughing so hard. And
what did you say?
I don't,
and
I
do you like
remember.
Her husband? Do you like her husband?
I love her husband.
She what does he do?
He's a bass player.
A stand up bass player.
I don't know why I said stand up bass player.
But wait, so she went with a musician. I love this family. Yeah. Did your father like him?
My mom, because he was playing in the Pops. And
wow.
So,
and the Boston Pops. Your mom is fucking incredible. Yeah. So did your father like him?
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
He called my dad and asked for his permission. And my dad was like, it's not the 1800s, George.
I love that.
He liked that. Yeah.
How long is the conservatory portion? And who are these women from Austria? And are they, where were their, who are they and where were their grandparents during the Holocaust? That's what I want to know. Okay.
They were teachers, but I don't really remember much more beyond that. I just thought they were so cool because they were like, you know, they were older, they were doing their own thing. And I just,
did they talk like this?
Yeah.
Did they have a
accents and they were like really sexy and like dressed really well and went out right. every night and smoked cigarettes.
How did you find them? Did you go to like a
Craigslist, you know,
oh
back,
my God.
Back in the day, you just find Craigslist things. And
all right. So how long are you with this guy and how long are you in the Atlantic Theater Conservatory?
I think it was a 2.5 year program and I was with him for maybe 3 years.
Really? And you never moved in with him?
He did. Yeah,
uh-oh.
We moved to the Upper West Side. So I had it in my head. I was going to go to the... Wait, is that where you live?
Yes. And it's all Jews. Yeah. And I've lived in the same apartment building since 1989. Okay.
Whoa.
Yep. In the same apartment, actually.
You know where Seaman Place is? It's past Columbia University.
Yes. Yes.
All the way up.
Yes.
So we moved in over there.
Okay. And how long did you live together?
For like a year, maybe.
Who broke up with who?
I sort of ended it. Yeah.
See, the fact that you like fall madly in love quickly and the fact that you're able to end it. Like, how did you end it?
I think it was an age thing. I think it was, I just felt too young. Like he was probably the best guy I've dated.
Right.
And we're still really good friends. And
right.
A good person and funny and like creative. He's a documentary filmmaker. And
Is he married now?
He is. He got married, he got divorced, and now he's with someone. I don't know if they officially.
Okay, and he's not good for you. I don't want him to. Too many relationships. So was that hard for you? That's a big thing to break up and move. Did you move out?
I moved out, yeah. I was going through a phase of just, you know, I was sort of a loose cannon, like doing
right.
whatever I wanted whenever I decided to do it. So,
right.
Yeah. So I moved out, but then we were kind of still seeing each other, but then I met some other boy and I was really into him. So.
Who, and is that person still in your life as well?
No.
Okay,
no.
Great. Okay.
The last time I saw him, I was using his printer before I moved to LA.
Aww.
I was like, can I use your printer? And I used his printer and then.
And that was the end of that. Thanks a lot.
And he was like, can you do it? Can you hurry up? I've got work in the morning.
And that was it.
That was it. Yeah.
Okay. That's great. So, do you start auditioning? Do you have an agent? Like, how does this whole, I know that you had you say that you bombed in an audition for Parks and Rec, but they say you actually didn't bomb, but what's your life like now? You're going to this conservatory. Is it full time?
Yeah, that was full time. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. I felt like I found my place. I found my people. I don't know. I loved the way they taught acting there because it wasn't super self-indulgent. It wasn't like all the feely, you know, animal stuff. It was just like, you know, David Mamet school. So, so you just say the words, say the words, stand there and say the words. And that's it, you know? So I kind of like
my friend Karen Kohlhaas taught there.
She was my teacher.
Oh, she was.
I love Karen. Oh my God. So Karen really was like obsessed with getting my voice lower. You know?
Really?
Yeah, she was.
I'm gonna talk to her.
She had me do St. Joan. You know?
Right.
Like a man. She was like, just do the whole thing.
No way. Did you do it?
I did. And I was sobbing, like it got, you know, to my emotional center and I was like, sobbing. And she was an amazing teacher. And we still, you know, message back and forth once in a while.
Oh my God. So I did 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, which was my first off-Broadway show. And she directed it. Ding dong. And we've been friends ever since. And we just did it at the Cherry Lane in 2019. And she came back to direct it too. She's great. I love her.
She was one of my favorite all time teachers.
She's hilarious. She's hilarious.
Yeah. She's just, and she had this sort of quiet way of teaching where you just lean in and you're
right.
Like, what are you gonna say? You know?
Right. Yeah, she's great.
Oh, that's so cool. Will you tell her hi?
I will. I'm going to. She just texted me yesterday or the day before. Can you audition while? Because a lot of places you can't audition while you're still at the conservatory. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't remember auditioning outside for anything.
Right.
Until I was done.
Okay, so you're done. Do you get an agent? Are you still doing Prairie Home? What the fuck is going on? You've now gone from music school, then you move to New York and live with two Nazis. And then you move in with your boyfriend. And now what's going on?
So I auditioned for a few things. I did some off Broadway theater.
What'd you do?
I did a show about the kidnapping of, what was her name? Who is that? Elizabeth Smart.
Oh, right. Yeah. Did you play Elizabeth Smart?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was, did not get the best reviews.
But did you do a lot of research on Elizabeth Smart?
Yeah. At the time I did. Yeah. Yeah.
And
I don't remember anything.
Like, now. I can't believe that fucking family because the father called the fucking head of the Mormon church before he called the police.
Whoa.
Yes.
Remember that.
I'm telling you the like people who are so overly religious or mental. Okay. So, okay. You did that. You did the off Broadway thing. Did your parents come in and like, that's my daughter. She's playing my daughter's the lead. She's playing Elizabeth Smart. But none of that.
I don't think so. I think my aunt came.
I love your aunt. Do you feel like you're closer to your aunt than you are to your mother?
No, but we have different relationships. I'd say.
All right. Yeah. And then are you close with her daughter?
My cousin? Aunt. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Maya. She's really sweet. This was before I actually did acting school, was I did 200 performances of Ramona Quimby as the children theater.
Oh, yeah.
Tour. Yeah. So I did a children's theater tour for like a year before I did the acting conservatory.
Okay. And are people saying to you like, okay, so my entire career, you're too tall, you're too loud, you're too Jewish, you're too everything. Are they constantly on your case about your voice?
Yes, I'd say so. Yeah. I mean, in acting school, it was they were right. Like the first thing, I raised my voice. I raised my hand asking a question in my first day. And the teacher was like, okay, we got to do something about that voice.
Has it always been like that through your childhood too? Or
no, I mean, because it worked on Prairie Home Companion.
Right. Right. Oh, fuck people. I hate everyone. Okay. So,
but it's also lowered. I mean, it used to be even worse,
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think acting school did help a little bit.
Thanks so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with the adorable Erica Rhodes. Now, Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast would not be possible without the help of the incredible Brittany Jo Sowards. Please subscribe, leave a review, five stars, please. It helps more people find this amazing podcast, and I'm really proud of it. It's a labor of love, and I am so appreciative that you listen because I love doing it. It's not like I make a lot of money from this. Okay, let's start right there. I make no money, but I love it. I love it, and I love people's stories, and that's why I do it. So look, go subscribe and leave a review. And it better be positive. If you haven't purchased my book, yes, I can say that when they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. You're in trouble, okay? Because it's ridiculous. You listen to my podcast and you didn't buy my book? Okay. So that's that. I'm also, if you get Hulu, please watch Hysterical. It's an incredible documentary. It came out a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I think, about what it's like to be a woman in the stand-up comedy industry, a female comic. It's really great, and I'm so proud to be in it. And you'll recognize a lot of the people in there because they've been on my show here called Kill Me Now. So there you go. Go to my website, judygold.com. There's links for my book. There's information about me. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram for all upcoming virtual live. Hopefully I won't be doing a lot of virtual events because I can't fucking take it anymore. Even though I do like the not traveling, but follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, like Jew, because I'm a Jew, because I'm Jewish. you know, I think you'll enjoy my inner thoughts that I share with everyone. And I can't thank you all enough for listening and supporting my podcast. We're almost at 300 episodes. I can't fucking believe it. And it's all because of you and me. And I love you all. So wear a mask, not outside, but just get vaccinated. Seriously. I mean, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? And thank you again for listening. And as we always say, so long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
Now. No,
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Just
Kill Me Now.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.